Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I have been wanting to talk to, engage in conversation, Laura Venroot Poole for, gosh, years. And I've talked to people about it and then kind of put it off. And she has her own podcast on the Queen City Podcast Network, but she is known as the creator and the president of a clothing store called Capital. There's also Capital Brentwood and one called Pool Shop. And she describes herself as fashion retail's entrepreneurial rule breaker. What do I know about fashion? She just is a fascinating person and like a whole person. People in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we are, know that name Venroot because her father, Richard Venroot, was the mayor of Charlotte, ran for governor. Just a very fine man. He was a member of the Republican Party when that really meant something, before it was just dragged into the gutter, as it has been recently. And she and I talk about that, and she hasn't given up on it. She was a young Democrat who campaigned for her father in the mid-90s. And it was back in the day when you could do such things. And she just is just a fully formed, wonderful, interesting person. And I think you'll be surprised at how just clear and real this person is. Laura Venroot Poole.
I have an incredible husband, incredible parents, daughter, and friends, and family. And it still feels really lonely to go through cancer because you have to do it yourself.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, and welcome to In Her Words, my podcast. This week, Laura Venroot Poole. We talked to her in the studios of the Queen City Podcast Network. She has some sort of allergy, a lot of pollen in the air here in Charlotte this time of year. And she was a trooper to do it. Her mother had just passed a couple of weeks before. And I hope I wasn't rude. I don't think I was. But she talks about her mom a good bit. I mean, I didn't really bring it up. But she's clearly loved her mom and, you know, had a world of respect. These people were, you know, just stand-up people. Very fine people. Her father, a Moorhead scholar at Chapel Hill. And then she went to Chapel Hill, but had a roundabout way of doing it. You'll hear it all. Laura Venroot Poole.
Where were you born?
Oh, I was born a few blocks from here.
Hospital or home?
Presbyterian Hospital.
For your mother, you're number what of how many?
I'm number two of three, middle child.
Did your mother ever tell you anything about her pregnancy, labor, and delivery with you?
Yes. And my mom just died 2 weeks ago, so it's on my mind a lot. You remember this. Do you remember the Bloomery and Bootery?
No, I wasn't here. I've only been here 25 years.
Okay. Well, there's a Krispy Kreme. You know where the overpass, where Pecan is?
Yeah.
There's a Krispy Kreme actually like where the underpass is, basically kind of like that. And so Presbyterian, her doctor was a Presbyterian, I guess. And so mom said that she would, every time she had a weigh-in, she would go get a dozen donuts and and keep them in the car. Keep them in the car.
Okay.
And then have the weigh-in and then go eat them all.
Every one of them.
I mean, and I don't know how many weigh-ins they did. Maybe nine, maybe four. I don't know. But that was what she told me. And my mom was this teeny little thing. So, I mean, and back then, you know, it was about keeping your weight down. They wanted you to be slim. That's why so many people smoked while they were pregnant back then. She smoked with my brother just to keep her weight down.
Because doctors recommended.
Yes.
At the time.
Exactly.
And the doctors recommended by brand also.
Yeah. I don't remember what she was, but I know she stopped when, you know, before I was here, but I know her mother smoked, both of her parents end on end, you know, and her mother smoked with the gloves.
The main thing is, were they surprised that you came along, or were they just
Parents surprised? Yeah. No, I don't believe so. No. I mean, I don't think it was, you know, I don't think mom had an ovulating app on her phone then. no, but I'm 2.5 years after my brother, and I think that, yeah, I think they definitely, I was wanted.
So when you,
and I know I was conceived in Europe. They were in Sweden visiting my dad's relatives, and I do remember my mom telling that story. Not that story, but but that was.
See, you got a presser for details.
Well, no more. I can't anymore.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Next time I see her.
Yeah. Exactly. Did she ever tell you anything when you were going to be a mom that helped you?
No, I don't. I mean, not in a bad way, but my parents are so meddling, and I eloped to their chagrin. But they'd barely met the guy I married, you know. So we never had that kind of a relationship. I trust anything she would say and her, you know, all of her opinions. And, but I don't know. We're all three very independent kids, and, they educated us, but they've never given us any money, you know? And so it's almost like, I don't know. We're independent people.
Why'd you elope?
Why did I elope? My dad was running for governor, and I didn't want a 500-person wedding. I wanted a 2-person wedding. maybe several years later at a big wedding, my dad said, "I'm sorry, I ignored you for a year. You know, was mad at you. That was the smartest thing you could have ever done." So it wasn't a mistake.
Did you ever do like a big ceremony?
We did. Well, we did. We maybe 6 months after, my mom did sort of a rehearsal dinner after the fact at the Mint Museum, and I wore a black cashmere dress.
Where did you pick it out from?
I worked in fashion then. It was Narciso Rodriguez who had done Carolyn Bessette's dress, and it's almost a copy of her wedding dress, but it's in black cashmere, super low back, high neck, really pretty. It is an interesting story. When I was in college, I went to see the Grateful Dead in San Francisco. And I was shopping with my boyfriend then, who was not ever going to be my husband. And we went to a thrift shop, it was like the Symphony thrift shop in San Francisco, Knob Hill or something. And I found the most beautiful dress of all time. An important dress from an African-American designer from the 60s who designed debutante dresses for, she did Jackie Kennedy's wedding dress, actually. And she worked for Saks within their department and did dresses for them, but it was one of her dresses. And so it's beautifully made. It's perfect. It was probably $75. And I bought it and brought it home and showed my mom. And this is, I'm 19 or something. And I said, you know, like, is this not the most beautiful thing you've ever seen? And she said, it is. And she said, where are you going to wear it? And I said, well, I'm definitely going to get married in it. And she was like, really? You're going to get married in a vintage dress you bought for $75? And I said, I am. Watch me. And she was like, all right. And it is truly one of the most beautiful dresses I've ever seen.
Was there emotion in those conversations? Because the trope of a mom saying, are you going out in that? is an incredibly loaded question. But was it an emotional conversation?
That one, or just, I mean, you know, generally, I didn't, you know, I learned everything I know about fashion from the Junior League thrift shop. Like I never had like a big clothing budget. So I wore vintage all the time. And my parents never, no, my whole life, my mother never made a comment about what I wore. I mean, I remember going to, you know, to Sunday school wearing a long dress and tennis, you know, Nike tennis shoes and, or not even, they were probably zips then. And mom never saying a word, and dad saying, like, is she wearing that? And she was like, mom's like, there, you know, there are more things, there are other things to fight about. This is not what I'm going to do.
Well, what was worth fighting about?
Nothing actually. My mom, I mean, again, she just died, so she's absolutely perfect. But no, I don't. I mean, I dropped out of. I mean, she didn't. She didn't. She wasn't angry when I eloped. She wasn't angry when I dropped out of college. I mean, I have amazing parents.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad's a lot less supportive, but she made it all okay. I mean, he's not less supportive. He's just less accepting of alternative methods. And she was always the one that sort of said, like, this is just so not a big deal. You need to calm down.
I have three daughters and a son, mm-hmm. and it is hard for me to see a daughter wear, I don't know, like shorts to go play and a halter and all that.
Yeah. I never did that. I'm interrupting you, but my daughter did. And it actually wasn't even short shorts. It was just ugly stuff. You know, it's just like she loved a place called Justice. And I would have a heart attack and my husband would just say, like, just don't show emotion on your face and just let her do what she wants to do. Let her pick out her stuff. And she has really good taste now. She's 19. But no, I mean, who cares?
I'm a little worried you're judging me.
With what? Well, no, I think that's why you do think that, because I think that's why you're asking that. And you think that I actually care about clothes, and I actually really don't. That's not my job. That's not my career. That's not what I've ever done. I'm really good at picking out clothes for people. I'm really good at matching clothes to the right person and to the right occasion, but I don't care. I mean, if the store were my store, the store would be navy cashmere sweaters and old Levi's 501s and Birkenstocks. I mean, those are my clothes. But that's not my business.
I thought you had a store.
I have, yes, multiple stores. But if I had a Laura store, like if this weren't a business.
Oh, I get you. Okay.
Yeah,
I get you.
I think I'm not who you think I am. I'm not interested. I don't care. I mean, I don't care. I do care. Justice was really ugly. but I'm not, I don't think that. I didn't grow up in a family where people. I think we were highly secure in who we were, and meaning that my parents loved us. We loved our parents. What we weren't like, oh, people, you know, will judge us if we wear that. No, like that's just not a thing.
Well, I grew up with a mom and dad who very much thought, "What will people say?"
Really?
Like you're a reflection on us.
Well, I absolutely feel that for sure.
I'm a lot older than you. And I guarantee you my father was more conservative than yours. And they very much would tell us, especially my sister, like, don't even go to the front door in a t-shirt.
Yeah. No, I didn't grow up that way. But I don't,
So when you look at people, though, what do you read in or understand about them by virtue of clothing choices?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, clothing is communication. It is telling people who you are, what you believe in, where you've been. You know, it's the ultimate, it's the first communication because it's what they see. It's the first thing people know about you. And so I would think it's, it is something to think about. How do you want the world to see you? It doesn't matter, really, but sometimes it does. I mean, in what you do and what you want to get done, I guess.
I heard of a study once in which they gave a bunch of students a white jacket and said, "This is a doctor's coat," and gave them a science exam. Mm-hmm. And the students who wore the doctor's coat, the white smock, scored higher than the students who did not. And then they gave the exact same white smock to students and told them it was an artist smock, and they scored lower than the control group.
I mean, I love that only because in ateliers, you know, people wear white coats.
What's an atelier?
Atelier is where they make, you know, couture, where they make clothes. The ladies and gentlemen wear white coats like doctors. And I guess like artists, same thing, kind of a little of both.
Yeah. How is it possible to buy clothing which is ethically made? How can one...
I mean, you really can't. I mean, most things aren't. But I think that I guess my measure is, did the person who produced this make a living wage? I mean, and most things that you buy, the answer is no.
I mean, I say that holding a 7-Eleven cup of coffee.
Yeah, no, I know.
Which cost about $2.
Yeah. I mean, you could go into the weeds and say, like, was the cotton grown with that? You know, is it organic? Is it? I mean, and I never really thought about that till I went to India, actually, that I never thought about pollution and involved in clothing in the production of cotton and things like that. But I think ultimately there's a designer who is all about sustainability, and she said that's actually what we should be asking is everything that you use, everything that you wear, did the person who made it make a living wage?
Because otherwise, it's two steps towards slavery.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so many parts of this. You know, fashion's kind of ridiculous. You know, talking about sustainability, we have to go to market 10 times a year, you know, basically, I mean, to Europe 6 times a year. I mean, it's like, there's nothing sustainable about this business. So quit telling us about being sustainable, you know? So I think that's this one simple thing that everybody could think about. And I think, to be honest, if you're buying your clothes at H&M, the answer is no. Mm-hmm. And probably at the Gap, the answer is probably no.
Yeah. And then the answer is if you buy your coffee at McDonald's or Dunkies, or it's very difficult.
Yeah. I mean, the coffee beans themselves, but like, is the team that's working there, are they maybe? Yeah, probably. Hopefully. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, how many layers do you want to do this? We could do it.
Yeah. For most people, fashion is not an art. What makes it an art? When does it become something other than craft?
I don't know. I mean, I think for me, the focus of my business in 27 years has always been about introducing the clients to the artist, introducing the clients to the designers. And that connection is so interesting for people, you know, to know who designed it and why and what they were thinking and how they did it and all of that. And so that's sort of what we've always done and how we became who we are, I think. But between craft and art, I don't know. I'm an art major, and I definitely prefer clothes over my paintings. They were bad. I mean, somebody else made the clothes, but I don't know. I don't know that there is a difference.
When you see anything on television or in the movies, like a fashion runway or these fashion competitions or design competitions, What drives you absolutely insane? What do you what do you throw shit at the television when you see it?
Nothing. I mean, they're all, you know, it's rare that you see something that you would want to buy. So, I mean, there's one really famous guy that won, and he has become a real designer. And every time I see his runway, I'm like, wow, this is really happening still. I don't know. I mean, yeah, the part
wow,
about being,
because you wouldn't buy it.
No, I wouldn't buy it. But that's the point, is that somebody does. I mean, that's the point, I guess, of being an artist or a craftsman and a craftsperson and having an audience. I mean, you have to have somebody who buys it. So if you have the audience, keep on going.
What about the way women's clothing is designed drives you kind of nuts?
It's small things. I mean,
like,
I want pockets. You know, I tend to love, female designers and prefer them probably. I have a few that are mix in there that are not women, but that I think really understand women, but they're few and far between. But it really is small, nuanced things. You know, like my favorite designer of all time is a woman named Phoebe Philo. And she always designed pockets that were half an inch lower than others, quarter an inch, just a little bit lower, because she liked the way it looked when women's arms were straighter in their pockets. You know, it's just like little nuanced, tiny things that nobody else would notice. And we hear, you know, in market and in when we view the collections, we hear those small stories and they mean so much to us. And then it's our job to communicate to the client. And client, you know, the client tries on the clothes and like, why do I feel so great in these pants? Why do I feel so cool in these pants? And we're like, well, actually, there is a reason, because Phoebe really wanted you to do this, you know. So it's little stuff. And I mean, that's my job is that connection and making things more magical for the client.
So you had breast cancer?
I had breast cancer. Yeah. 2.5 years ago. And, and had, double mastectomy and reconstruction like my mom had as well. 20 some years ago.
Is this something you talk about with your daughter?
Not really. I mean, my mom didn't really talk to me about it. You know, sort of just, you just move on and act like, I mean, when my mom did it, had it, you acted like nothing was happening and everything was fine. I think my daughter knew that everything was not that fine. But yeah, I mean, she'll say, I guess this is going to happen to me too. And I'll say, probably not, because things are so, you know, technology is so different. They know so much more every year, and you probably won't. But that's, I'm sure that's hard to look at your mother and your grandmother and a lot of other women in our family.
How did you discover?
Just a mammogram. It was a spot that they looked at for 8 or 10 years and kept on saying, you know, they would come back and say the doctor wants to see you and bring me tissue because they thought I was going to start crying. And then they would say, actually, we're just going to watch it. And so it was just this thing that they kept on watching. And then when they finally removed it, and they thought that it was really not a big deal, and then they removed it and it was a really big tumor. And anyway, you just don't know. It was like behind a rib or something.
When your mother had that, were you freaked out when you found your mother was having that, or?
Yeah. I mean, of course.
Yeah.
And I nursed her, you know. I mean, I think my dad was running for governor at the time. Our tumor was in the exact same space.
Wow. did she freak out?
About me?
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, she was lovely and supportive, but no, I don't think she did.
And how do you go about, like processing that? Like what's
I think I do it differently than a lot of people, because I several things. One, I took a full four or five months off and I didn't do anything. I couldn't read. I couldn't, you know, it was like I just sort of zoned out for months. And That was okay for me because I had I'd worked for 25 years and I had never done that before. I had maybe a 3-month maternity leave. And other than that, I've worked all through. So I really enjoyed that very much, actually. And it was the first time I really like allowed myself to feel loved and accept love from all of my friends, because I think my business is very supportive of other people. And, we're, you know, it's always like, you look beautiful. You look amazing. This is perfect. And you don't do a lot of receiving. And so it was the first time I'd really received. So it's 2.5 years ago. I mean, I've been in trauma therapy. I've done with talk trauma therapist. I still do pretty hardcore, like acupuncture every other week. I do, myofascial, release around all my scars. Excuse me, every other week. I
don't know what myofascial
it's it's okay. I
mean, I'm sorry.
No. It's massage, but it's like a different method of massage. It's sort of like I've been working on my scars and, I've done a ton of work and I don't think it's I don't wallow in it. I'm not, you know, like why I'm not crying or whining about it, but I do think, people get over illnesses a little quickly and are like, I'm fine. Everything's fine. Because I think everybody wants
back
you
to work.
Yep. And everybody wants everything to be fine. And so I've got tons of scars. And so I think that that's something that I'll work on my whole life. I mean, they don't go away. And I think that you have to, you know, put energy into them and, keep them soft and, you know, or, and not, cause I think energy goes to those places, to weak points. And I know it's interesting when my mom died, like the month or so before she died, she was saying, I have so much pain in my scars and so much pain in my radiation scars still, you know, 20 years later. And I'm like, well, mom, you never, ever did anything for them. You know, you just sort of was like, had the operation, this is over, I'm healthy, the end, you know? So I don't know, it's different. It's generational, I guess, a different way of doing it. But I work pretty hard on it.
I admire that. when you have girlfriends who have breast cancer, one of the great delusions is that any two cancers are the same and that one cancer survivor can say, oh, well, I had breast cancer, therefore I can tell you all about my experience. What do you say to girlfriends since you've had it?
Yeah, I mean, I had a long conversation with a friend yesterday who I, you know, didn't know who was about to have a double mastectomy. I think that the funniest thing about it is that you get so much support from people you don't know. It's mostly like friend of a friend. Most of the time people will connect you with friend of a friend who has the same kind of cancer and maybe the same kind of surgery, but nobody has the same experience. And so they'll say this, nobody will say like, then this will happen. I've never heard anybody say that to me, and everybody's had all different kinds of things. I would never talk like that. I can just say, this is my experience. This is what happened to me. I would suggest this. I don't think people talk like that in the breast cancer world, but it is this like weird secret world because there's no support. There's no literature. There's there's very little that relates. And so the most support that I got was friend of a friend and friend of a friend from all over the country, all over the world. And you know, it's like this really good friend of mine would have her friend call me from California and we'd talk for 2 hours, you know, and it was never, the conversations were really, and everybody's sort of a little off on their journey, you know, like a year behind, 2 months behind, whatever. And it's more just like, here's my experience. Oh, here's mine, you know, like back and forth, and they don't have to relate. It's just, you just know that somebody else is in it with you. And I think that that was the thing that was so odd about it too, is I have an incredible husband, incredible parents, daughter, and friends and family. And, it still feels really lonely to go through cancer because you have to do it yourself. I mean, ultimately it's you doing it, you know, the whole journey is yours. So I don't know. It's been interesting, but it was also one of the best years of my life.
I know women personally who have had breast reduction surgery in addition to mastectomy and lumpectomies. Mm-hmm. And no two people can answer this the same, too, but what did your breasts represent to you?
I don't know. I know that I have a 19-year-old daughter that I bore and breastfed, and that was amazing, you know, and I think she's a beautiful, healthy young woman because a lot, you know, not a lot because of that, but I do feel like that's part of it. I mean, I don't know, but no, I'm not sure. Cause I come, there's a lot of baggage involved in it because of my mom probably. So I'm in trauma therapy about that. I don't know that I have an answer for you.
Do you ever, do you buy stuff for your husband?
No, we have a men's clothing store.
Oh.
That we own. So no, I don't.
So he must have really, really good taste.
He has really, really good taste, but he wears the same thing every day. He's an architect and he wears the exact same outfit every day. Not even outfits, just jeans.
And?
And usually a denim shirt.
With a collar.
Yeah.
Okay. Jacket.
Mm-mm. I mean, rarely.
Socks.
Boots.
Cowboy or?
Kinda. Yeah, like more motorcycle boots.
Hmm.
But he wears the same thing every day. And dudes don't wash their jeans either. I mean, I don't think his jeans have ever been washed.
Hmm.
They're not really meant to be washed, actually. I mean, real, you know, selvedge denim jeans are really not meant to be washed.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I've paid women to help me pick out clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to explain, I don't want to look like I'm ready for the casket.
Right.
In other words, not a suit.
I think you have a good look. I don't think you need help. I think you have a good look.
Thank you. I mean, that part we will use. and I don't want to look like I'm a poser, like I'm trying to dress like my son.
Right.
But the same time, our friend Brian's friend, Johnny Millwater, said to me, when you go up to do a set, even if it's only 3 minutes of comedy, he said, put some thought in, like act like you give a shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you don't have to be Jerry Seinfeld. You don't have to wear a tie. You don't have to wear a jacket and slacks and all that. But by the same token, he taught us, don't go up ever in shorts.
Oh, no.
He said,
you shouldn't go in public in shorts.
He said, it's disrespectful.
It is. I mean, for an adult man, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Hmm. It also undercuts any kind of authority you have.
Agree.
But what I've found is, even if you wear jeans and shoes, closed-toed shoes, if you wear sandals or Birkenstocks, it gives away a lot of your authority.
Agree.
And if you don't wear socks, it gives away.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. Some. I disagree with that one. And I don't want to see dudes' toes, though. I don't.
And then if you wear a jacket and a dress shirt, even if you're wearing jeans, that I think it telegraphs a certain
respect.
Respect and seriousness, and commands that. Well, of others.
I think attire is about understanding your audience and understanding where you're, you know, your host and your hostess. You know, I mean, I think you go to an event or a person's house or a business, and it's about it is about being polite to them, like what is appropriate to them because they're receiving me.
Did you have some feelings during the breast cancer time? Why is God doing this to me?
Never. No, I don't live that way.
Do you believe there is something like a God?
Absolutely. But I don't think, I mean, I think all of it is just stuff you're supposed to learn from and go through.
Do you go to church?
Yeah.
Whereabouts, can I ask?
The place where for 52 years, Myers Park Presbyterian.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you've stayed there. You didn't go away, or did you?
Don't go every week.
did you ever say, I'm taking a break?
I've taken lots of breaks, but I always come back. I mean, it's where I was baptized, and my mom's going to be buried there. I mean, I'm excited to be able to visit her. It's been really interesting to watch how supportive it's been to my daughter during the pandemic and high school. And it was really supportive to me at that age, too.
That kind of multi-generational.
Yeah, yeah.
But is it hard coming back to the home? Same place where people knew you? Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Andover. I went to boarding school outside of Boston.
Was it hard coming back? Why don't you live in Boston or San Francisco?
It wasn't hard. I mean, it's comforting. And again, in my career that I chose to, I know where people are going in these clothes. I know how they need to look. I know how they want to feel. And so I'm really comfortable here. I know the venues. I know the families. I know, I know the neighborhoods or, all of that stuff. So I feel really confident in what I do. Charlotte has been an incredibly supportive place, because the people are so receptive and they're nice and they're not jaded. And, I've never had a designer come here from all over the world. We've had designers for all of this time. Every time they come, they say, I've never met clients like this. I've never met people that are so nice and interested and interesting and listen and want to know my story and all that. I don't think that happens in Boston. I don't think that happens in San Francisco. Maybe, but Charlotte is particularly open and gracious. The business that I chose to pursue, the women have a lot of self-respect and like to be beautiful and like to show up. They have a lot of dignity, and I haven't gone to school in Boston, people would look at you like there was something wrong with you if you wore mascara or highlighted your hair. People are like, what are you doing? It's just different.
Well, not in San Francisco, they wouldn't, or Seattle, or, oh, really?
Yeah, I think a little. The South is different.
Yeah.
But North Carolina is really cool. North Carolina's, it's a very different place. People here are really cool.
I love it, but this may go back to Mississippi when I took my bride who came from Syracuse, New York, to Jackson, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I said, Southern people are nicer. And she said, they're fake.
No.
She said, in upstate New York, people are real. They don't try to be nice. They're they're just kind. And I think what she's talking about is this kind of sorority girl thing we ran into at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Where everybody had to act like they liked each other.
I don't think that happens here. I think I think North Carolina is very real.
And they'll be straight with you.
I mean, a veil of humility between two mountains of conceit, Virginia and South Carolina. I mean, I think North Carolina is really like, they're super normal people. They are nice.
Did you go to college?
I went to Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Did you graduate there?
Yes, I did.
What did you study?
Studio art, painting.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you happy that you went to UNC?
Yeah, I dropped it. I hated it. I went for a year and absolutely hated it and dropped out and did a Knowles semester, National Outdoor Leadership School, and had 3 showers in 3 months and hiked on the Southwest. And then I did a semester at Pinland.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in the mountains. And then I needed a year to unravel a little from a high-paced high school. And I needed, I think like you asked, I probably needed to accept that I wanted to be here and that this was the right place for me and I could find my way in the South. Because I think that I was not, you know, my path was probably, you know, I was supposed to marry this certain kind of person and do this certain kind of thing. And that's not really who I am.
Why was that boyfriend never going to be a husband?
Well, he was a drug dealer, I think.
Well, I mean, you're saying that's a bad thing.
No, because he was spoiled and he had a trust fund and he was not a person that I wanted to have a life with. Hmm.
So what did it take for you to go, that was fun. I'm on my way.
With him? Oh, I didn't care. I mean, I just said, don't ever ask me to marry you because I'll say no.
Hmm. How'd you meet your husband?
I met him socially. In Raleigh, my dad was running for governor and I was working on his campaign and I lived in Raleigh.
And this guy walked into work on the campaign?
No, just at a party.
Oh, neat. Mm-hmm. And what was it that you kind of saw?
I think exactly that, the opposite of that. I mean, he's a totally self-made, you know, went to college on a tennis scholarship and, you know, weirdly, I probably saw a lot of my dad in him, that, you know, somebody that is really driven and has strong values and ideas about the way he wanted to live and completely independent. You know, I mean, had been, you know, left at 18 and from Fayetteville. And never went back. And I mean, I was 24 years old. He was 35. So it was a little scandalous. But I just saw like us as a team he was a person. I think that also maybe guys had been sort of competitive with me when they were my age, you know, that I couldn't see them wanting great success for me or wanting, I don't know. That didn't seem like a partnership. And I think with Perry, it has always felt like we're in this together and we were gonna, you know, reach these goals or do these things and live this life that we both wanted. And he wanted me to be successful and I wanted him to be successful.
You have seen the Republican Party in North Carolina when there was Jim Martin and Richard Vinroot mm-hmm. and a whole host of others
yeah.
who they might not see eye to eye with a lot of people, and they would go toe to toe with anybody, but they were serious people. Moorhead Scholar,
yep.
you know, Bronze Star,
yep.
College professor in the case of Jim Martin. And now there are two offices in the state of North Carolina, one of them being no less than governor, mm-hmm. in which the people who are running look with disdain on a rich, broad education. And they say things which are profoundly ignorant, which show that they have not visited North Africa or the Holy Land mm-hmm. and not looked at people as fellow humans.
Yeah.
Just speaking for yourself, can there be a serious Republican Party in 5 years or 10 or 20?
I don't know. I mean, when I worked on my dad's campaign, I was a young Democrat. I mean, you know, my mom was one of the more liberal people I knew. So it's not like I don't come from this.
Well, that was before Reagan, correct? It was before Reagan.
When
your dad went?
No.
It was?
I was in college, 90s.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My math is bad. I'm sorry.
Mid 90s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. My dad's friends with Jim Hunt and he's friends with Harvey Gantt. I mean, like, that's not, we didn't grow up that way. I mean, I think you could disagree politically on issues, but everybody was friends and colleagues.
And you could have a young Democrat work on her dad's campaign.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think you're coming right off of a primary. And so I think the language is different in a primary, and a little upsetting in a primary, but, I don't know. I mean, I was really stung by his loss because, I did feel like my dad was more qualified both times than both candidates he ran against. And I thought I did think he was better educated. I thought he was, anything you would want in a person, I thought he was more of. And so it really hurt to have him rejected, and especially to have him rejected in Mecklenburg County. That was really painful. After as kids too, we'd spent, you know, he was 10 years on city council. He was 2 terms mayor. Like a lot of our lives were sacrificed, I think, for his service. And so it really stung. We were like, really? You know? I don't know the answer to that. And I've never reconciled it. There's never been some other than like, he was too good for it. You know, a lot of people will say that to me and I'm like, I don't know that that's really it. Actually, people maybe just didn't like him, but that's hard because it's your dad. And, you know, I mean, my dad is obviously my hero. But I don't know. Dad was telling me that Roy Cooper was a Morehead Scholar. So yeah, I guess. I mean, it does still happen, but I do think it's rare that somebody's...
Well, I was thinking more of a...
I know you're talking about.
aggressive sort of people at Chapel Hill are wine and cheese. They look down their nose at everyone. They're the educational elite. They're trying to be Harvard. They think they're above North Carolina. They don't want to work for a living.
Yeah, I don't know about that. But I mean, we traveled all over the state and that was never something we felt or heard because my parents are both lovely and people loved them. They're humans and they're kind. And so anybody they met loved my parents. But
they ever meet Donald Trump?
No, I don't believe so. I don't think any of us have.
Yeah.
No. but you know, that's, you know, then Pat McCrory was successful.
And to a point.
He won.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the East must have liked him. You know, North Carolina's it's an interesting state, and it's funny when you hear, like, you know, the National Republican Party talking about the DNC, actually, well, both of them saying their plans for North Carolina, and you're like, you don't understand North Carolina, actually. You have no idea. Because it is this long, narrow thing that is like this, you know, swirling and twirling. And
well, I like to try to tell people that it's a place where there were there was a massacre when the Communist Party held a rally and the Klan came and slaughtered people. So it is a state that accommodated, and those people were not from outside of North Carolina. Right. There are communists in North Carolina and there are Klansmen to this day.
Right.
And I try to tell people, you know, we accommodate multitudes. It's a very long, skinny, broad state.
One of my best friends from California during the last election, she knew that my dad was a Republican. And she said, please, you know, she was like, tell me, please promise me, like, your dad's not going to vote for him. Is he, you know, tell me he's not going to vote for him. And there's no way North Carolina can vote for him. And I said, one, I can tell you, like, my mom has said she will divorce him if he does. So no, he won't. But I was like, it's North Carolina. Like, I can't promise you anything. I mean, it's a really big state. Mecklenburg County. Yeah, they probably won't. It's just so much more complicated than people know.
When you said you took that time and went to the outdoors program.
Yeah.
What are places in North Carolina that are in the outdoors that you go to almost as a touchstone and you're like, oh my God, this is spiritual. This is so beautiful. I feel so close.
Well, there's so many in North Carolina. I mean, they're everywhere.
Pick.
Well, my place really would be, I went to summer camp at a place called Camp Tonawanda that's been around since the 20s. And that's my place. It's outside of Hendersonville, near Flat Rock. And Carl Sandburg's house is really amazing while you're there. But that's my place. I mean, I pair, my husband would like, when we would be up in the mountains in the summer, he would drop me off at Tonawanda when they weren't in session and just let me go because he knew I was going to cry for 3 hours and then he'd pick me up. I just walk around and cry because I love it so much.
It is beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, every part of the state's beautiful. And I've been to all of our 100 counties.
Mm-hmm. When you get into, for instance, Hyde County.
Yeah.
And what is it, Lake Matamuskeet?
Yeah, Matamuskeet.
And there are
a lot of mosquitoes.
Black bear.
Yeah, yeah.
There are black bears.
Yeah, swamps. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
And then, you know, tundra swans. We're not talking Canada geese. We're talking tundra swans in North Carolina. And there's old growth forest in the West.
Yeah.
Never virgin old growth forest.
Yeah.
It's mystical.
It's great.
It is a great
place.
Love
it.
It is a great place. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm proud that my kids went to school there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, and also that there's so much, I mean, that all of your children who are all very different and all of everybody in my family, also my siblings, my parents, we all went, we're all very different and we all found our place there. And we all adore it more than anything. Hmm. And we all had completely different experiences. My sister still lives there and works there.
I have a hard time with my kids because I have one Gen Z and three millennials. And they are very down.
Mm.
Do you find sometimes that you have to try to be encouraging of your daughter that the future?
Yeah, she's 19. So are you Gen X?
No, I'm a boomer.
Okay. Parent my husband too. Yeah. I'm X. Gen X is like, whatever. Like, I think that she's not at that place yet. I mean, she just dropped out of college. So mm-hmm. Yeah, she's definitely down a little bit, but she's actually really happy because she's doing stuff and traveling. And, but I think we really, really underestimate how much the pandemic affected them and depressed them and scared them. You know, for me, mostly just because of business, I'd been through the recession, you know, 2008 through probably 2012, really. That was such a huge reckoning for me that the pandemic didn't feel like a big deal. But I think, like, my daughter hadn't had experiences like that. So I think living with us, we were kind of like, whatever. But I think we really underestimate how it affected them. I mean, she had 2 years of high school, year and a half of high school on Zoom. Yeah.
And so socially, about the way she connects and has friendships and hangs out, I told a very young person the other day, we long for the days in which kids could hang at the mall and go get pregnant, honey. You know, we're like, if only there were more teen pregnancy now and more hanging at the mall.
Well, you could have an abortion then. So yeah. No, they don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you decide to be a mom?
I thought you were good. I was married maybe 7 years or so before we had our daughter. Because I've been married, and my math's not right. I've been married 27 years and she's 19.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I just didn't, well, one, I wanted to get my career started and going. And I was never a person that grew up and said, like, I want 4.5 children. That was just so not me. It could have happened or not happened. Like, it wasn't something I thought about. And what happened actually was that I had I saw such a, you know, here, Not many of the women that I knew worked. I was one of the only people that I knew that worked, and my mom worked, but none of her friends knew she worked, you know? It's so funny, in her obituary, people were like, wow, I had no idea. Like, okay. But I saw this darling gal who I worked with, who was a shoe designer, and she's from Richmond, but she lived in New York, and she had this beautiful brand of shoes, and I went to her apartment to buy the collection, and she was pregnant. And I had never seen a person doing, having a career that they wanted and having a baby. And I thought, oh, like, this is a thing. I could actually do this, which is so sad. I mean, it was, you know, the early 2000s. And I went home after that trip to New York and I said, I think I want to have a baby because people, you can do this. Like, this is something that people do. And Perry was like, all right, let's do it. And that was it. And then I had one, and I felt like in my career, my job is so travel heavy that it was so painful to leave her so much and to leave him so much that my heart could only take one. There's no way I could have done it twice because it was really painful to leave them.
You've been lovely to make time for me. I've been asking Meredith and Brian and everybody, and I'm like, are you keeping me from her? Is there something you're worried about? Are you embarrassed of me, Brian?
What were they? Maybe they were worried I would be too boring.
No, I don't think that that's the case. So I usually end the same way.
Yeah.
If you and I got struck by lightning today, and the only thing that survived is this little piece of audio, what is your legacy?
I think my legacy, I hope, is that I have shown a group of women, you know, I've got 40 women that work with me. I hope that I've shown them what this designer showed me, that you could figure out a way to have a career and to be fulfilled and also have a family and be fulfilled. And somehow you can figure out the ways to make that work. And it doesn't have to mean a full-time job. And, you know, I mean, there's a mixture of things that you could do, but I think I really believe that women should have something outside of the home that makes them excited. So I hope I've shown women how to do that.
Well, I really appreciate you and I really admire you. Thank you for making time for this.
Thank you for making time. Thanks for having me.
I'm really grateful to Laura for her willingness to sit and chat, especially with her mom just passing. And I value her outlook, her take on things, and I value her ability to be straightforward about it, to correct me when I was wrong, and to just, you know, state her case, to just be a really genuine, matter-of-fact person. I respect her a great deal. I respect her position in the fashion industry, and I respect her as a businesswoman, a mom, a wife, and just an all-around great North Carolinian. Thank you, Laura.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported me and manlistening.com, In Her Words, the podcast, and voicelocket.com. There's going to be more. There's more to come. So stay tuned. I'm not done creating yet. I'm almost 65, but I'm not done yet. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to CleanOrigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to CleanOrigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's CleanOrigin.com, code RADIO10.